There is little doubt among all spiritual circles that we've been witnessing and creating a powerful and dynamic shift in human consciousness in the past decades. As we pull away from one paradigm, moving into the new, we acknowledge and honor those who have led us and continue to do so by illuminating the path forward. These visionaries bring us the gifts of awakening to our own truest selves, connecting us back to the divine within and without, revealing our highest and most authentic purpose and destiny. Gary Zukav has, for decades, led millions of people all across the globe into the sacred place of soul space. His books, lectures, and words have been vital in guiding us to the highest states of spiritual growth. Once again, Gary Zukav brings us along in the journey by revealing the revolutionary new path for spiritual growth in his new book, Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Authentic Power. In this book, Gary offers us the tools for understanding the new relationship dynamic, moving us into partnership as equals, allowing us to see ourselves and relate through our understanding of self as well as our understanding of our soul's purpose. Once more, Gary Zukav welcomes us into the great shift with grace, wisdom, and authenticity. He once again shows himself as dedicated, devoted, and divinely inspired. Please join me today in welcoming Gary Zukav. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hello, Catherine. It's so good to be on your show again.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's been, I can't believe, a year since we spoke last. And in this past year, I obviously am anticipating and excited that you have brought us yet again another book. And you're going to be actually in the Seattle area this upcoming week on Friday at the Center for Spiritual Living, giving a lecture about the book, right?
That's right. But it's more than a lecture.
Oh.
It's a...
Go ahead, tell me what it is.
It's a talk, and I'm looking forward to answering any questions that people might have. I love being in Seattle, and I love talking about the things that are most important to me and hopefully important to many of the people who come.
I think they are. And, you know, what's really interesting and I think what's exciting is many, many people, Gary, who've been doing so much work over the past many, many years, would say that they feel in some ways very motivated to be joining the next rung, if you would, to go up to the next level. And your book is timely, and I think there's so many people that will welcome it with open arms. Its concepts are vital to us really taking the next leap forward, because as you well know, you know, being one of the many leaders that's ushered in the new paradigm, we're ready for that next step, right? And that's basically what we're going to be talking about in this hour.
Yes, it is. And I so appreciate your referring to me as one of the leaders. If you mean by that one of the people who started writing books maybe a little before some others, I would agree to that. But as far as the shift that you mentioned, I feel it's the shift that's leading me, and it's the shift that's leading all of us more than are leading one another.
Right. That's a very important point to make, and I think that although we feel, those of us indebted to you for being articulate and passionate enough to produce books like you've done for us, you know, we want to be able to honor you. So I hope you accept our accolades to you for what you've helped us accomplish in our lives here.
I do, Catherine. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I love most is talking about the transformation in consciousness that's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening now with greater frequency, greater intensity, greater impact, and greater visibility than it ever has in the past. Some of the things that I considered writing about and did write about some of them 20 years ago, my goodness, that's longer than my granddaughters have been alive. But for me, it's not that long a time.
Right.
And I look back at those things that seem so, I thought, dare I write something like this or share something like this? It seems so different. And now It all seems very evident and ordinary. For example, I love to share about the new male and the new female.
Mm-hmm.
The new female being the old female is the one whose fulfillment is in bearing and raising children. And the old male is the one whose fulfillment comes in providing and protecting for his family. But now a new male and a new female are emerging, and that's part of this shift in consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And the new female is one who is competent in every domain of activity that she chooses to engage.
Mm-hmm.
For example, She can be a head of state. She can be a captain of an aircraft. She can be a CEO, as well as a nanny or a mother or a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
She can be a construction worker.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things were not so evident just not so long ago.
I think
they're very much a part of our experience.
Right. I think what we need to really look at and acknowledge to our own credit as a world is that we have stepped into a new definition of equality. And I think that's a very important point to define as it pertains to our conversation in this hour, because it's a very pivotal cornerstone to the foundation that we or the building, the bridge that we're building that's ushering us into this new way of being with ourselves, with one another, and with the world in which we're living.
That's right. And the old male, by the way, is being replaced by a new male. And the new male is tender, sensitive, caring, intuitive. And so he doesn't need a female to bring those qualities into his life, just as a new female doesn't need a male to protect and provide for her. Instead, they are looking for companions on the journey of spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say that spiritual partnership is not a partnership only for couples.
Mm-hmm.
You can create a spiritual partnership in your biological family,
right,
in the workplace, with classmates, with friends. A spiritual partnership is a partnership between equals for the purpose of spiritual growth.
Right.
And it's the only relationship I'm going to suggest that will give you the depth and substance that is satisfying to you in a relationship.
Right.
And I'm so glad that you talked about equality, because it's very much a part of spiritual partnership.
Right.
The partners in a spiritual partnership are each committed to their own spiritual development. And what that means is you can be religious or not religious, but spiritual development requires, in any case and in all cases, that you develop your emotional awareness, your awareness of what you're feeling in terms of sensations in your body, that you develop the ability to make responsible choices, which means choices that will create constructive consequences that you're willing to assume responsibility for.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, spiritual growth is the process of learning to distinguish within yourself the difference between fear and love and choosing love.
Right.
It's as simple as that. And spiritual partners are drawn to one another because they are each committed to doing that themselves and to supporting each other or one another in doing that.
Right. You know, I'd like to ask and bring it back to the individual for a second, acknowledging, if you would, where we have come from as individuals around the world over these many decades or these past couple of decades, because you write so well about the fact that we have evolved to a point, honestly, where we have begun being in the world as multi-sensory beings rather than relying and operating off of the old paradigm of living by five senses. And this is such an important point for us to really fully understand so we can truly applaud ourselves for our progress and march forward into this new way of embracing spiritual partnership, as you're explaining here, with a deep understanding of what has just transpired that enables us to do so.
Yes. What you're talking about is the shift in consciousness that's been happening for a while now and is becoming evident. That is the expansion of awareness beyond the limitations of the five senses, beyond what we can taste and hear and touch and smell and see.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we're beginning, millions of us are beginning to experience ourselves as more than we thought we were.
Right.
More than bodies and minds, more than molecules and enzymes. We're beginning to sense ourselves as souls as well as personality.
Right, right.
We're beginning to sense, that's the big shift.
Right, right.
We're beginning to see our lives as meaningful.
And you know, it's interesting because and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think it's important to say that for the most part, and certainly not all people, because there have always been very awakened people present on Earth since the dawn of man, but we would say, by and large, the majority of the population across the globe for centuries have been held down, if you would, or restricted, perhaps, by their confinement to living and seeing themselves in the world and playing out their lives through only being attached to the five senses, right?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for centuries, it's for millennia.
Right.
It's the origin of our species.
Right.
We have been limited in our perception to the five senses. And becoming multisensory is not something that we can take credit for.
Mm-hmm.
That is happening in millions of individuals, and it's going to happen in millions more,
mm-hmm.
hundreds of millions more within the next few generations. In
mm-hmm.
fact, within a few generations, the entire human family will be multisensory.
Mm-hmm.
And that is happening automatically, so to speak. And it's bringing with it a new potential and new ways of seeing things.
Right.
And that new potential does not happen automatically. We have to create it each within ourselves.
Right.
So the evolutionary shift that is so much a part of what is happening now is not going to make anyone on our planet more gentle or more patient or more caring.
Mm-hmm.
Or even more wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make us more aware.
Right.
And then the question becomes, what do we do with our expanded awareness?
Right.
And it's not as though we were held down in the past by five sensory perception. That was our gift. That was the way that we evolved, through the pursuit of external power, the ability to manipulate and to control so that we could survive and evolve by surviving.
Right.
But now we are moving beyond the limitations of the five senses. And that is a new gift. And with it comes a new way of evolution, and that's spiritual growth. And by the way, Catherine, if I may, I'd like to point out that many of our largest religions, for example, are based on multisensory perceptions.
Mm.
I'm speaking of Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
speaking of the Vedic traditions, Hinduism,
mm-hmm.
in which reincarnation is an acknowledged part of that belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And in all of the Aboriginal cultures, there is a belief or a practice of experiencing the unseen world.
Right.
And there are people who can visit the unseen world and bring back what they learn to the seen world to help people. These people are called shamans.
Right.
And even here in the West, with our Judeo-Christian heritage, including the Islamic tradition,
mm-hmm.
there is an understanding that consciousness does not end at death, and that we create our experiences after we leave the Earth School by our choice of actions and intentions in the Earth School. And so in its own way, that is an understanding of a reality that is not physical, but that exists, that impacts upon us and upon which we impact.
Right.
The difference is that although most Buddhists, all Buddhists and all Hindus and all Christians who believe in heaven and hell believe in non-physical domains of existence that are real, but not five sensory, not empirical.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them don't experience those domains. In other words, most Buddhists don't actually experience the time between lives, nor do most Hindus, although their religions are based upon the understanding that that is a real phenomenon. Most or many Christians do not really love their neighbors enough to die for them.
Right.
Some of them are so angry at their neighbors that they're ready to kill them.
Right. Right.
So they understand the concept of heaven and hell and are driven by it, but they're not really understanding that the core of their belief system is love.
Right.
Love, not righteousness, not
right.
hatred, but love. So much love that the one upon whom Christianity is based gave his life for others rather than took the life of others who didn't agree with him.
Right.
So the short of this is that human experience, human history, includes many realms of and experiences of multisensory perception. But the difference now is that all of humanity over a period of a few generations is becoming multisensory. What we needed to take on faith before or believe in, we can see for ourselves, we can experience for ourselves.
Right.
The reality that consciousness and responsibility do not end at death, they continue.
Right.
And as we begin to even consider these as real possibilities, it makes us much more aware of what we're choosing and why.
Yes. Would you say that for ever since mankind has been here, that there's been those peoples that have held and understood and lived by multisensory perceptions and had that as part of their tradition, their cultures, and their religious belief systems, their spiritual belief systems, and that we have, as a world, we're finding our way back, if you would, to some extent, back to, a respect and acknowledgement of you know, opening to these very realms of existence?
Well, I wouldn't say that we're finding our way back to something. I would say that something new that has never happened before is drawing us to it if we choose to go there.
Right.
That is the emergence of multisensory perception species-wide, a transformation in awareness of the entire human species and the appearance of new potential, the difference in understanding of power as we used to hold it, and as we are now beginning to see it. We used to see power as the ability to manipulate and to control.
Right. I would agree completely about the new path. And I think a part of that, too, that I get intuitively, the feeling I get is that we are moving away from separation from one another, and that we are becoming a sort of the global community of the human experience, which carries with it a lot more opening for us to live naturally and at peace with one another, unlike other times.
Well, we are beginning, I feel, to experience our connectedness. But whether we act as connected people
or not
depends upon the choices that we make.
Right.
It's one thing to say, I don't want to be separate from you. I'm moving toward connectedness and away from separation. But how do you do that when you're angry?
Right.
How do you do that when you're so jealous that you can't go to sleep at night? How do you do that when you're so worried about your house being foreclosed?
Right.
How do you do that when you're so worried that you have cancer or that one of your children has AIDS? How do you do that when you are so angry that all you want to do is lash out with your words or with your fist? That's when the creation of authentic power is offered as an opportunity.
Right.
That's when your choice of intention makes a difference in you and makes a difference in the world. And if you choose to indulge a frightened part of your personality, and by that I mean a part that's angry, a part that's jealous, a part that's vengeful, a part that feels superior and entitled, or a part that feels inferior and needs to please, if you continue to indulge obsessive thoughts such as critically criticizing other people or criticizing yourself, if you choose to continue compulsive behaviors such as workaholism or perfectionism, if you choose to continue without challenging addictive behaviors such as overeating, smoking, watching pornography, having mindless sex, shopping, gambling, using drugs, all of these are experiences of fear. They are all ways of masking a very painful underlying experience by reaching out to reshape the world, to make yourself feel valuable and safe in the moment.
Right.
That doesn't work anymore. The pursuit of external power now produces only violence and destruction, whether it's in Iraq or Afghanistan or the Gulf of Mexico, or in your neighborhood,
right,
or in your family, or in your home with the person or the people you live with. So we are looking now at, we are a part of a species that is transforming. Its expansion, its awareness is expanding enormously, and its choices are changing. It's the choice between external power manipulating others, trying to impress others, trying to influence others in order to feel better about yourself, or, and that doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's counterproductive to our evolution.
Right.
Or having the skill and the courage, the developed skill and the courage, to instead look inside yourself at what needs to be healed and change that.
Right. Before we move into understanding how in partnership, in spiritual partnership, and in practicing that, we can help heal the frightened parts and, come to a more intimate, if you would, understanding of our spirit, our soul, our soul's purpose, our personality. Can you explain to us how this moving and shifting into multisensory perception, what that has to do with authentic power? I'd like our listeners to understand a little bit more by what you mean by authentic power and how one arrives at knowing that they are, living with their authentic power.
The emergence of multisensory perception has everything to do with authentic power, because without multisensory perception, the idea of authentic power probably wouldn't even exist. Authentic power is the alignment of your personality with your soul.
Mm-hmm.
It's the alignment with your own will, with your volition, mm-hmm. of yourself, with the highest, most noble parts of yourself that you can reach for, the parts that intend harmony, cooperation, sharing, and reverence for life. And as you align yourself with these values and these intentions, the intentions of your soul, your life begins to fill with meaning,
mm-hmm.
and purpose, and you have more energy, and you begin to enjoy being alive instead of being frustrated by your experiences. And this is now our evolutionary path, the creation of authentic power.
Right.
And to create authentic power requires doing just what we were talking about, what I was talking about a moment ago. And that means, for example, when someone says something that offends you, or someone does something that causes you to react, say they're not honest or they're not respectful, and you begin to judge them, they don't have integrity, they don't care about other people, and you become angry, then is the time to recognize that a frightened part of your personality has been activated,
mm-hmm.
and you feel angry or righteous or resentful. Most people, when they feel that way, try to change the person that made them feel that way.
Right.
They accuse them. They say, have you no integrity? Don't you care about other people? You're selfish, you're crude. Or they weep, they get tearful, and they try to manipulate the person that way to change behavior so that they themselves will feel better. That's the pursuit of external power. It is focusing on the trigger of your pain.
Mm-hmm.
Creating authentic power is focusing on what got triggered.
Right.
It is taking your attention away from the circumstance that activated a frightened part of your personality and placing it directly on what got activated. For example, when you feel like shouting at someone and you're so angry that you can hardly contain yourself, just stop.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of acting on that impulse, put your attention inside your body. For example, on your chest area, in your chest area, in your throat area, in your solar plexus area, and look for physical sensations. And as you get to practice in this, you'll find that when you're angry, when you do this, you'll find that there are painful physical sensations in your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our vernacular language expresses this. We speak in terms of heartache.
Right.
Or getting choked up.
Right.
Or I have butterflies in my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these are real. And as you develop emotional awareness, you develop the ability to stop when you feel angry or jealous or about to act and you're not sure why you're going to act or what your intention for acting is, and you put your attention in these three areas to start with. There's more,
mm-hmm.
but start with your throat, your chest, and your solar plexus. See what you're feeling. If you feel any painful physical sensations there, then you know that a frightened part of your personality is active,
mm.
and that if you act on it, if you indulge it, if you behave robotically as you have in the past, you will create painful consequences for yourself. And so you can decide in that moment if you want to indulge your anger or your jealousy, and lash out with your words or withdraw emotionally or whatever you have done in the past, or if you want to do something different, if you want to choose anew, choose a constructive intention, a healthy intention that will create constructive consequences. Mm-hmm. When you do that, Catherine, and everyone who's listening, that's when you create authentic power.
Right.
That moment. And the more you challenge a frightened part of your personality, the more it begins to lose its control over you.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually its power over you disintegrates.
I'd like to ask, because I think you just described in that example so beautifully what it means to align your personality with your soul. Is that an example of that, Gary?
Yes, it is.
Right.
For example, I anger has always been a big part of my life, but now it doesn't control me nearly as much. When I was in Harvard, when I was growing up in Kansas, I was quite angry, and in fact, it was anger and fear that drove me into becoming a paratrooper and then becoming a special forces officer. Now, it may seem strange that I would say that I became a special forces officer in Vietnam, a Green Beret, and fear did it.
Mm.
Here's what I mean. You know, it took a lot of courage to go to jump school. It takes a lot of courage to jump out of an airplane, say a night equipment jump. It takes a lot of courage to go on a combat patrol. And I had that courage. But what I wasn't aware of, and until much later in my life, maybe 10 or 15 years later, was that I was not courageous enough to experience how frightened I was of trying and failing.
Mm-hmm.
How frightened I was not to live up to the expectations that I had for myself, or to not be able to live up to the expectations that I thought other people had of me. And how frightened I was of being ridiculed.
Mm.
If I'd known that, I don't think I wouldn't have been drawn to the path that I was so magnetically drawn to. I wanted to be a paratrooper. I wanted to be a Green Beret. I wanted the uniform. I wanted the boots. I wanted the insignia. I wanted the mission, the top secret mission. I wanted to be admired. I wanted to feel manly. And what I really wanted was to feel lovable.
Mm.
Well, I couldn't even think in those terms then.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I was so frightened that I couldn't even conceive of myself as being frightened of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a word for that, macho.
Mm.
I was so frightened that I couldn't imagine that I was as frightened as I was.
Mm.
And so...
So you became embellished with those very activities and behaviors in your mind that were the opposite of what you were really after in some way, right? I mean, trying to be macho as opposed to acknowledging what you really needed was to feel tender and love.
Yes. I can look back on it many years later and say, I agree with you. But at the time, I thought that doing these things was drawing me toward what I felt was admiration or manliness or worthiness.
Right.
Toward love. But you're right, it didn't. What it did was attract to me others who had the same energy that I did.
Right.
And so as a result, I became a Green Beret, and my friends, I didn't relate in the Army to people who were ambulance drivers or clerks or cooks. I didn't even relate to infantrymen because I felt superior to them because they weren't airborne. We called them legs.
Right.
And I didn't even really relate to airborne infantry because I was a special forces officer. So I really only related, although airborne infantry was much more acceptable in my world to me. See, that's how stratified and frightened I was. I just had to be with people that were like me mm-hmm. in order to feel valuable. And when I went to the officers' club to drink, I would always drink with other Green Beret officers, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But... fighter pilots, they were okay.
Right.
Submariners, they were okay. Navy SEALs, they were okay. They were my peers. They were worthy of my company.
Right.
That's how insecure I was.
Mm.
And everyone does this, Catherine.
Right.
When they pursue external power, they are drawn, without realizing it, to others with like energy. This is what creates the white-only No Jews Country Club.
Right.
This is what creates professional and trade associations. This is what creates exclusive neighborhoods. This is what creates, well, even tenement houses are exclusive neighborhoods because not everyone lives in them,
mm-hmm.
although they don't think of them as exclusive, not hardly.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, everyone experiences a very deep inner pain. It's the pain of powerlessness.
Mm-hmm.
That means the pain of powerlessness is the experience of feeling unworthy, the experience of feeling ugly inside, as though if people could see you the way you really are, the way you see yourself, they wouldn't want anything to do with you. It's the experience of wanting to belong and not belonging, or the experience of wanting to love and feeling that you're not capable of loving, or the experience of wanting to be loved and feeling that you're unlovable.
Mm-hmm.
This is the pain of powerlessness, and everyone has it. To say that the human species is insecure is to state the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
While we were five sensory, we masked the pain of powerlessness by pursuing external power, by trying to make ourselves more attractive, more adorable, more influential,
mm-hmm.
so that people will listen to us or admire us or at least notice that we're there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is now being, that is what no longer works, the pursuit of external power. And we're beginning to see that the life that we want to live requires the creation of authentic power, requires looking at what is so painful in us that we can't be with people who don't think or act or look like us. What is so painful within us that we become enraged, and in our rage would damage relationships with those we love the most?
Mm-hmm.
What is it within us that produces behavior that is so out of control where we cannot stop masturbating or watching pornography or shopping or using drugs or drinking alcohol or smoking? What creates that?
Mm-hmm.
All of these are ways of masking or covering the pain of powerlessness.
Mm-hmm.
And your addictions, by the way, are the most strong, frightened parts of your personality.
Right.
So as you're on the spiritual path, eventually you will come to your addictions. They are your greatest inadequacies. They are the parts of your personality that are the most out of your control. They are controlled by external circumstances. When an alcoholic, for example, sees an open bottle, he drinks. When a sex addict meets a willing sexual partner, they have sex. When someone who is addicted to nicotine is offered a cigarette, she lights up. All of these addictions mask the pain of powerlessness. That's why just having a clamp put in your stomach or wearing nicotine patches won't address the real issue which lies beneath the behavior. That's pain.
Right.
That's so painful. And as a result, the addiction, the pain will be masked in a way. For example, someone who overeats will become a smoker, or someone who stops smoking will start to overeat, or someone who stops overeating, if they don't start smoking, will become promiscuous or start drinking.
Right.
Because what lies beneath this destructive behavior is pain so intense that it requires all of your commitment, all of your courage, and all of your awareness to find it, experience it, and challenge it with your own will. Now, this is something that you can start every day at any time. Every time you have a critical thought, or you're impatient, or you're angry, or you need to please, you can stop
mm-hmm.
before you follow that impulse. Feel what you're feeling in your solar plexus area, in your chest area, in your throat area. And if there are physical sensations, experiment with not acting as you have before
mm-hmm.
when you felt these impulses. You can look at your thoughts. And by the way, all of these things that I'm suggesting, are found in my new book, Spiritual Partnership,
right.
The Journey to Authentic Power.
Right.
And there's guidelines in there that can be very helpful to you. And the reason I called it The Journey to Authentic Power is because you can't create spiritual partnerships unless you're creating authentic power, unless you're starting to look at what needs to be changed in you and changing it, rather than what you think needs to be changed in other people and trying to change them.
Right.
And when you do, you start to attract other people who are also interested in changing themselves and becoming more aware emotionally and in making more healthy choices.
Mm-hmm. You know,
you're naturally attracted to one another, and these are your potential spiritual partners.
Right. I was going to say the very word partnership implies that there's a relationship with someone outside yourself, although one could have, in fact, a partnership with themselves as a beginning, right?
The work to create authentic power is interior.
Right.
But it's always done in interaction with others, because it's others, your interactions, your experiences, or your thoughts of others,
mm-hmm.
always create in you emotional experiences.
Right. Reflect back to you.
Well, they do more than reflect. Yes.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is, whenever you react with people, they create, that creates or activates experiences in you. And each time it does, you have the opportunity to become aware of those experiences. If it's anger, jealousy, resentment, superiority, need to please, whatever it is, we'll call those, we'll put those in one category, and we'll give it the generic name of fear.
Okay.
Or your interactions or experiences or thoughts of others may create in you experiences of gratitude or patience or caring or appreciation, or contentment. And we can put these experiences in another category and give it the generic name, love.
Right.
And creating authentic power requires your developing the ability to separate these two categories and recognize when a part of your personality that belongs in the fear category is present, and challenge it by not acting on it.
Right.
Consciously not acting on it and doing something constructive instead. And recognizing when a part of your personality, a loving part, a part that comes from the category of love, is active in you, and cultivating it by experiencing it. You'll notice that all of the physical sensations in your body then feel wonderful, not painful. And your thoughts, instead of being critical, are thoughts of gratitude or appreciation or care.
Mm-hmm.
And when you follow those impulses, they don't create destructive, painful experiences like the frightened parts do,
mm-hmm.
following them. They create constructive, wonderful feeling experiences. And so as you develop this ability, you begin to be able to create your future consciously.
Right.
This is the development of mastery in your life.
Right.
The creation of power authentic.
And this is where the alignment occurs between personality and soul.
This is exactly where it occurs. And spiritual partners are committed to aligning their personalities with their soul. I with my soul, you with your soul.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, spiritual partners are also committed to supporting one another. For example, my first spiritual partner, Linda Francis, and I have been living together for 17 years. And I want to say again, spiritual partnership is not only a couple's dynamic. But because we're together frequently, she supports me so often with her courage, with her ability to create authentic power, and with her commitment to helping me. For example, not by teaching or preaching, but by, let me give you some examples.
Yeah.
One of the most painful experiences it's possible to be in is a power struggle.
Mm.
A power struggle is a struggle for external power, for the ability to manipulate and to control one another. When you're in a power struggle, you're in it because a frightened part of your personality knows that you're right, that the other person is wrong, and feels an overwhelming need to demonstrate that and to have the other person agree with you. The reason I say it's painful is this. When you're in that experience the next time, stop, and you'll find out how much courage it takes just to stop, not to have the last word.
Mm-hmm.
And instead to look inside yourself at what you're feeling. Put your attention in your throat and chest and solar plexus. Notice your thoughts. You'll see that they're critical. and your sensations will be uncomfortable or painful, and your intention is going to be to dominate or change another person so that you'll feel better about yourself in that moment. This is the pursuit of external power. And the issue is not what you're arguing about, whether this was right or that was wrong, whether somebody should have done this or should have done that. The pain of powerlessness occurs every time the world is not the way that a frightened part of your personality needs it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And as you stop in that moment, you will find that it takes a lot of courage simply not to act as you have in the past, to win the struggle or leave it with resentment and distance and judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get in a power struggle with Linda, I strive to do that. And I see with admiration when we're in a power struggle and she's able to do that herself,
mm-hmm.
and to step out of the power struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And if she sees that a frightened part of my personality might be behind something I say or do, she'll ask me if that might be the case so I can consider it.
Right.
She won't try to change me or teach me.
Right.
She'll support me. And all of the ways of doing these things are in this book. That's why I'm so happy to have written it and to be able to share it.
Right.
It's Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Authentic Power, because you have to create authentic power to create a spiritual partnership, a partnership between equals for the purpose of spiritual growth. And you cannot create authentic power without relationships of substance and depth. They're different facets of the same jewel.
Right.
By sensory perception. So when you read this book, and I recommend it to you, it has it goes into the why, the what, the how, and the who,
mm-hmm.
of spiritual partnership. And it gives you guidelines, not directions, instructions, dictations, but guidelines that you can use to experiment with your life. Because to create spiritual partnerships, relationships of substance and depth, and authentic power, in which you're no longer controlled by your fears, requires commitment,
mm-hmm.
and courage and compassion and conscious communications and conscious actions.
Yes.
And all of these, the spiritual partnership guidelines take you through the development of these step by step by step.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I've already mentioned several of the commitment guidelines. The first one is, if you probably surmised, is pay attention to what I can learn about myself,
mm-hmm.
especially when I'm upset from all of my interactions. And you do that by paying attention to your emotions, your thoughts, and your intentions. That's what you're committed to. You're not committed to a relationship. You're not committed to another person. You're not committed to a belief system. You're committed to drawing a line in the sand when it comes to your fears, to the parts of your personality that are out of control, to the anger that is destroying your life, to the need to please that torments you continually. That's the commitment. And that commitment has to be there in order to truly create authentic power, to develop mastery in your life. Otherwise, you'll continue to react indefinitely, maybe until you die.
Right.
But there's no judgment of that. It's not as though you're doing something wrong if
right.
you do that.
Right.
It simply means that you won't change, and you'll continue to create painful consequences for
right.
yourself.
Right, which is painful to observe. In the book, Gary, you mentioned something that was so lovely, and I wanted to have you talk about it a little bit today, and that is what the difference is between happiness and joy.
Yes, when a frightened part of your personality gets what it wants, it becomes happy. For example, suppose you very much want to be in a relationship with someone. You want to live with someone. You want to have her as your mate. And she agrees, or he agrees. Then you feel happy. You feel on top of the world. And the pain you had of not having that person disappears. It evaporates. Suppose you want to have a better job. Or put it this way, suppose that you don't have a job, you've lost your job, and you're in pain at not having your job and not knowing how you can support yourself, and your life is filled with agonizing, painful experiences and thoughts about what will I do, how can I live, where will I live. and then you find a job. And not only a job, but one that paid you as well as the last job and that you like doing. Suddenly, all of those painful experiences are gone. You've experienced them as being gone. That's happiness. But they're not gone. They have been masked in the moment. The moment that the frightened part of your personality gets what it feels it needs. But that's temporary. If you really want, for example, a Mercedes-Benz, and you finally get it, you're happy. But as soon as someone bangs up a fender, you're unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, happiness is temporary.
Right.
It's transient. Pursuing external power is a roller coaster. You go up and down and up and down. External power is gained and lost. You win an election, it can be won, and an election can be lost. The value of your investment portfolio goes up, and it goes down. Your ability to manipulate people with your beauty or your strength will disappear as you grow older.
Mm-hmm.
Authentic power and joy are closely related. That is, creating authentic power is the same as creating joy. Creating joy requires changing what's inside of you, and that is permanent. As you continue to challenge and change your anger and jealousy and resentment and need to please and feelings of entitlement and all the painful experiences that those create, you begin to change yourself, and these experiences no longer have such a control over you, and your life begins to fill with meaning. And as it does, joy begins to come into your life. Joy and meaning are twins.
Mm-hmm.
And so to create happiness requires changing someone else. And that's a continual struggle because there's always someone else in your life to make you unhappy. That means to be the way a frightened part of your personality doesn't want them to be.
Right.
This is the nature of the Earth School. There are always opportunities to grow spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
As you begin to change what's the interior sources of your pain and cultivate the interior sources of your love, you create a life of more love and less fear.
Right.
More joy and less pain. So creating joy requires changing yourself. That's the difference between happiness and joy.
Right.
Happiness is temporary, and it requires changing others, if you can.
Right.
Joy is permanent, and it requires changing yourself.
Right. Tell me what you meant by, and tell our listeners what you mean by universal human.
That's the biggest potential. That's the potential of a multi-sensory humanity, a universal human, an authentically powered human, a human that is beyond nation, beyond religion, beyond culture, beyond sex, beyond economic circumstance, beyond race, a human whose allegiance is to life with a capital L first and to all else second. A human, for example, who is an American second and a citizen of the universe first.
Mm-hmm.
An American who is a woman second and a citizen of the universe first. A woman or a person who is black second and a person who is a citizen of the universe first. A person who is white or yellow second and a citizen of the universe first. And so on, and so on, and so on. Wherever you go, in whatever domain of experience, a universal human is a citizen of the universe. Not a child of the universe, but an adult, responsible citizen of the universe whose allegiance is to life first, and everything else first, everything else second. Life, with a capital L, is more important than being an American. I'll say that again. Life, with a capital L first, is more important than being an American, than being a Russian, than being a German, than being a woman, than being a man, than being wealthy, than being indigent, than being educated, than being not educated. It is more important to a universal human than anything, because a universal human lives his or her life to contribute. His or her life, small l, to contribute to life,
large
capital L.
Right, right. Gary, in our last couple of minutes here, because we're already here at the end of our time together, first of all, I'd like to say that it's so pleasurable to hear, you know, your recommendations and your thoughts and your ideas about ways that we can, you know, come together like this, because I think ultimately that to me feels very, if you would, in my multisensory perception, it feels like the truest path for all of us is to move toward achieving this state of universal human. It just feels more right to me than anything I've felt or heard before. What would be some parting words that you might offer us here in the last second?
Yes, please come to our new website, which we are developing now. It's Seat of the Soul, S-E-A-T, like what you sit on, of the S-O-U-L.com. It has wonderful things on it, and I invite you there with all of my heart. We give Linda and I, Linda Francis, give a five-day retreat on Mount Hood every summer, and this year it's July 25th to 29th. And I invite you to join us. If you resonate with anything that I've said, I'd love to meet you, and I'd love to be able to answer your questions in depth. And more than just intellectual questions, to have experiences so that we can explore all of these things experientially. And the journey to the soul is on the website, too. And for those of you who are listening around the country, I'm on a book tour now. And please come to seatofthesoul.com, because maybe I'll be where you are. We're going to be in Denver and Dallas and New York and some other places.
Great.
And new experiences for me. I now have a Facebook page, Twitter page, and I love sharing through these new modalities, new for me.
Good, good.
So if you go to my Facebook page or Twitter page, you'll be able to, for example, get SMS text messages that I will do my best to make sure are substantive and valuable for you.
Very good. And the book is available now for purchase, isn't it? Is it Spiritual Partnership? Yes, good.
Yes, it is. You can buy it anywhere. Go to just about any bookstore. Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Authentic Power. I love just saying the name because it's much more than a book to me. It is our future if we decide to create one. But it's not we as a collective that decides. It's each of us individually. Creating authentic power means you become the authority in your life. And it's up to you to do that. And there's ways to do that, ways that you can experiment with and see for yourself if they work for you. You don't have to believe in them. All you need to do is be open and experiment and use your life as a laboratory. And I'm so happy to be with you.
That's very wonderful, and thank you so much. And for those of you that are living in the Seattle area, Gary is going to be at Sandpoint at this Center for Spiritual Living Friday evening. Is that an open event, Gary, where people can go to the door and get tickets to come in?
Yes, it is, exactly.
Very good.
But you can also go to our website and find the phone numbers or the place where they sell tickets in advance.
Very good, very good. They can go do that as well. Thank you so much for joining me, Gary, very much. Love to have you, and I look forward to being able to talk with you again soon. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners, very much for joining us today. This is Catherine Bradford sending you my warmest blessings, and thank you so much. Bye-bye for now.